Okay, it's my pleasure to welcome you to this afternoon session. And so we'll start with Jérôme Gallon from INSERM and Sorbonne University, who will talk to us about the immune contexture in the era of cancer immunotherapy.
Well, thank you Hugues, thank you Alain, thanks for inviting me. It's a great meeting and I will indeed discuss the immune contexture, go back to this, the definition, and show you also some unpublished data about CAR T cells, because there was a focus also on CAR T cells. And here are my disclosures. I'm the co-founder of an immuno-oncology diagnostic company, AlioDx, that is now a Veracyte company, and I talk to people in industry. So just to start with, our view of cancer, that is a view where we did not want to focus on a particular molecule. I had no favorite cells, really. We wanted to really decipher and have a comprehensive analysis of human tumors and with systems biology by doing both genomics and immunomics. And I will summarize some of these findings. A long time ago now, we developed this concept of the immune contexture, and we define them as being the important immune parameters that are associated with the survival of the patients. And they consist in four parameters, the types of immune cells, the density of these immune cells within tumors, the location, so the spatial information, where are those immune cells. And in fact, these first three parameters, I will refer them later on with the Immunoscore, which is an assay that we developed based on these first three parameters. And then the fourth parameter is the quality of the immune response that can be measured by, for example, immune signatures. And we showed that there is a core of element of the adaptive immunity that is essential. And when we quantify these Immunoscore, at the time it was not called Immunoscore yet, but we had the surprise, I would say, to see that all the patients on top here are patients having a high Immunoscore, meaning these inflamed tumors, these strong pre-existing immunity, these patients have high densities of T cells and cytotoxic T cells, both in the center of the tumor and the invasive margin of the tumor. And this point is very important, this invasive margin. In contrast to the patients that have a low densities of T cells and cytotoxic T cells in both regions, where you can see a dramatic outcome for these patients. And what was the most striking was the fact that this was the same regardless of the stage of the patients. As you can see here, all patients, regardless of their stage, were having a good clinical outcome, and this is 15 years of follow-up for the patients. So this coordinated adaptive immunity, more than the tumor invasion parameters, were really predicting the survival of the patients. And the novel paradigm came really when we did the multivariate analysis to test the strength and the dependency of these parameters. And not only Immunoscore is significant on the Cox multivariate analysis, but beyond that, all the other parameters that are the key parameters for cancer, the strongest parameters, the progression of cancer into the primary organ, the T stage, the invasion, the metastasis, the lymph node metastasis, the grade of differentiation of the tumors are no longer significant and are statistically dependent upon the pre-existing immunity of the patients. And so we, following that, characterized this immune contexture and defined it and refined it with years, and characterized patients according to this type of immune contexture. And back in 2006, we had these two groups categories stratifying patients into these low Immunoscore non-inflamed tumors versus the high Immunoscore, and following papers in 2006, 2009, in three categories with this altered, so absence of immune response, altered immune response, or optimal immune response, and then in this paper in 2009, so way before the immunotherapy era, the fact that there were four major types of primary tumors, the hot, the cold, and within the altered, this exclusion types of tumors with this invasive margin, and the fourth being the immunosuppressed. And we discussed the fact that these immune contexture parameters are not only associated with the survival of the patients independently of the treatment, meaning that they are prognostic, but also associated with the prediction of response to treatment, and as are also mechanistic signatures, because these same parameters are upregulated or increased when the patient is responding efficiently to a treatment. And these consist in families of molecules, the immunoscore, that is the cytotoxic T cells, some chemokines, some specific cytokines, and adhesion molecules. And in terms of cells, most of the cells of the adaptive immune response, including T follicular helper cells, Th1 cells for the CD4, as well as cytotoxic T cells and B cells. And we discussed the fact that there is a continuum of cancer surveillance, and I want to highlight this point with two stories. This continuum of cancer immunosurveillance depends on the quality and the intensity of that immune response within the tumor microenvironment. And this was initially published back in 2013. Since then, we analyzed this continuum from pre-cancer lesions to the primary tumor up to the latest metastasis. And I will just briefly start with the primary tumor, just to give you an update on where we are with the immunoscore. So primary tumors, we started an international consortium, the Worldwide Immunoscore Consortium, to validate the power of evaluating the pre-existing immunity of patients to stratify patients according to their risk. And we had very good feedback from many centers in many countries. And the paper was published back in 2018 in The Lancet with this international validation of the consensus immunoscore. So we had many discussions on what should be the test, what should be the way to measure immunoscore, and had this validation. Since then, and that was done on thousands of patients. Since then, we had several publications focusing on, in particular, colorectal cancer, and here in these four studies, focusing on stage three colorectal cancer, because there is a huge clinical need for these patients, including in two randomized phase three clinical trials, the N0147 here and the IDEA clinical trial. And the four studies showed the validated, the prognostic value of immunoscore. Here is a five groups of patients, depending upon their pre-existing immunity. Immunoscore zero are the ones having a cold tumor, the coldest tumor, and then immunoscore one, two, three, and four, with immunoscore being the hottest tumors with high densities both in the center and invasive margin. And as you can see, there's a direct relationship between the survival of a patient and the immunoscore of a patient. All these patients have stage three disease, so meaning already having lymph node metastasis, and you can see that the immunoscore four patients in the four independent studies have no relapse for 6, 5 to 8 years. And following that, so there was the introduction into cancer guidelines. So first into the WHO book, for the first time in digestive tumor, the immune response was introduced as measured by the immunoscore as an essential and desirable diagnostic criteria. And this was followed in 2020 in Europe by the introduction into the European clinical practice guidelines for the evaluation of immunoscore, both for its prognostic and predictive value of response to chemotherapy. And this was followed last year by the inclusion into the Pan-Asian clinical practice guidelines. And so this is the first test that is done in routine clinical practice that tells something about the immune system of a cancer patient. Before that, any cancer patients coming at the hospital would have a lot of assays and a lot of ways of characterizing the tumor cells and characterizing its cancer, his or her cancer, but absolutely no test to say something about the immunity of the patient. So now, when we did all these analyses, we were astonished to see that, in fact, there is during the primary tumor development, this is the T stage, from T inside 2 to T2, T3, T4, there's a gradual decrease of the densities of the adaptive immune cells. This is the number of cells per square millimeter of tissue for CD8. This is a deeper analysis of many adaptive immune compartments. And there is this decrease, and strikingly, in the T inside 2, T1, the earliest tumors, this is when you have the strongest adaptive immune response. And so probably means that the adaptive immunity was set and was primed before cancer. So we wanted to address that point and focusing on pre-cancer lesions. So now we are not talking about cancer patients, we are talking about people at risk of developing cancer. So what is best to take heavy smokers? So we took heavy smokers at risk, of course, of developing lung squamous cell carcinoma, and had bronchoscopy with this collaboration with Céline Mascot, bronchoscopy that were taken in the lung of healthy smokers. And in the tissue, there was either normal lung or in some patients or in some people already hyperplasia, metaplasia, mal dysplasia, moderate dysplasia, severe dysplasia, and some had already squamous cell carcinoma. So we had all these tissue at all the stages that pathologists can distinguish, and we did genomics on these tissues as well as a characterization of immune infiltrate, which led to this article showing that the immune evasion occurs before tumor invasion in these patients. So when looking at all these samples from normal lung in the development of during oncogenesis to cancer, so you have here all the stages from zero to cancer with all the precancer stages, you can see some patterns of gene expression. You have the genes that are constantly ascending, and these are mostly, if you look at the function of these genes, related to the proliferation. Some that are ascending only in high grade, and here you can find most of the immune cells and genes. Some that are ascending only in cancer, some descending, and some with more complex patterns. And what was really striking was the fact that the complete immune system at the same time, both in high-grade dysplasia, both innate and adaptive immune system was fully activated, and at the same time, that you can see here, there was an increase of co-inhibitors and checkpoints, including PD-L1, IDO, PD-1, CTLA-4, TIGIT, that were increased during the course of precancer development, as well as immunosuppressive cytokines. And if we summarize these findings, so in fact, based on molecular profiling, there are not these eight stages, but rather four main stages: normal or close to normal, low-grade, high-grade dysplasia, and then cancer. In terms of epithelial changes, there's a proliferation and DNA repair that is first affected, then metabolism changes, and very late at the stage of cancer, EMT transition. In terms of the immune microenvironment, there's first an immune sensing with resident immune cells that are activated. Then there is an increase of naive CD4 T cells, and in high-grade dysplasia, the full activation of all aspects of the immunity, including immune escape mechanisms already, which, of course, may be of interest for future ways of looking at people at risk of developing cancer. So now going to the other hand of the spectrum, meaning metastasis. So we did a study in order to see whether there was an immune escape at some point. And we took fully resected metastasis, so not small biopsies, but more than 600 fully resected metastasis, either in the liver or the lung, and analyzed genomics and immunomics of these metastases, trying to see whether there was an immune escape or several immune escape mechanisms, and if this was compatible with the theories of cancer evolution. And just as a reminder, the theories of cancer evolution, there are four main models that have been proposed. First, the linear model, saying that you have the sequence of different driver mutation that is needed before cancer evolution and dissemination. The neutral model, in contrast, that says that there's no selection whatsoever of particular cell clones. The Big Bang model, in contrast, says that you need to have multiple driver mutation before dissemination can occur. And the branch model that is probably the most accepted is that different drivers on different tumor cells could evolve in parallel and disseminate in parallel. The common thing is that none of these models involves a possible immune pressure and possible Darwinian selection. And all these theories are really tumor cell centric, really based only on mutations and driver genes. And so we wanted to see whether in human we could recapitulate one of these or different. And we had this evolution of metastasis in space and time where we selected patients in order to be able to address that question. So we selected patients having not only a primary tumor, but multiple synchronous metastases so that we could follow the tumor clones that were in those different synchronous metastases. And then patients having multiple metachronous metastases and recurrence with more than 10 years of follow-up in those patients. Indeed, in each of the resected metastases, because they were all fully resected, that was one of the criteria, characterize the metastasis. Of course, we did a phylogenetic tree of the tumor clones, and going beyond that, look at the evolvogram of these tumor clones. So from the primary tumor on the left, what are the main two clones here? The main clone is the blue one. The second main clone is the purple one. And as you can see, this blue clone, that is the major clone on the primary tumor, is not transmitted and it does not disseminate to any of the metastases, in contrast to this purple clone. But the purple clone is not the main clone anymore, and the first synchronous metastasis that you have, which is the orange, with a subclone inside it, the green subclone. And you can see that the green subclone disappears, and only the orange one is transmitted, then disappears and then reappear again. And we analyzed this by looking at all the mutations of these different tumor clones, and were surprised to see that, in fact, the non-recurrent clones are the ones that are immunoedited, and the progressing clones are the ones that are immune-privileged. And if we look at two parameters, so the immunoediting, so meaning the capacity to detect immunogenic clones that can be recognized by the patient, by the T cells from the patients, because they have the proper HLA, and the immunoscore within each of the metastases. If we plot these two graphs, so you have immunoscore here, the higher is the immunoscore, the hotter and the better is the adaptive immune response. The immunoediting score, the lower is the score, in fact, the more immunoediting there is. And you can see that there are four, in these four quadrants, there are in fact three major types of metastasis. And you can see that for immunoediting to occur, you need to have a high immunoscore in these metastases. So immunoscore is necessary, but it's not sufficient to see an immunoediting with genetic testing, because you have these high no patients. So it is necessary, but not sufficient. And so we analyzed these three different types of metastases to see what was different. And several things were different indeed. So these are the three different types, the low, no, low immunoscore, no immunoediting, and the high immunoscore with no immunoediting or with immunoediting, meaning the disappearance of immunogenic mutations. And as you can see, one of the main characteristics was that the fact that these tumor clones that were not disseminating, and these metastases having these clones immunoedited were not disseminated, had higher densities of T cells, cytotoxic T cells, and a close proximity of the T cells to the Ki-67 proliferating tumor cells, which was one of the main characteristics of these tumors, of these metastases. In contrast to the high-NO, where one of the immune escape mechanism that we could clearly see, that you can see here from these graphs from the difference, was the proximity distance between T cells and PD-L1 positive cells. And these metastases having no signs of immunoediting beside the fact that they have a high density of T cells, had in fact a close proximity of PD-L1 to T cells. This was not the only mechanistic, and I will not enter all the details of the different mechanisms, but basically we were for the first time in human being able to see that the local adaptive immunity and the immunoediting was associated or not with the dissemination of tumor clones. And we proposed this parallel immune selection model with this dynamic interaction of tumor cells with immune cells. And so this could, of course, have an impact on cancer treatment and immunotherapy, and we proposed in that review different ways of treating patients according not to cancer type, according not to tumor mutations, but according to the pre-existing immunity, and different ways to treat hot tumors, altered tumors, or cold tumors. We applied that to CAR T cells, and this is what I'm going to present to finish this talk. So we were lucky to be able to work with these CAR T cells in the context of DLBCL-treated patients. And these are, in fact, the clinical trials that led to the approval of CAR T cells in DLBCL patients with this ZUMA-1 trial that you can see. This was on refractory large B-cell lymphoma at the latest in third-line treatment. And you can see in blue here the overall survival of the patients with the patients with CD19 CAR T cells, and the survival of the patients with complete response in green and partial response in orange. And so, of course, it's been discussed with Philippe this morning, I guess, later during the talk, but there are multiple ways to improve CAR T cells. Of course, improving the CAR constructs. Of course, one of them could be to get better intracellular CAR signaling, and this has been done through the different generation of CAR, the first, second, third generation of CARs, to get better targets, and this is particularly important for solid tumors, get dual targets, inducible CARs, killing CARs. There are many ways, and there are experts here in the room that will certainly talk about all of this. But all of this is only concentrating on the construct, on the way of killing tumor cells, and not considering the patients. And so what I want to highlight here and to show here is that the CAR T cells are not working alone within the patients, but they are working within the patients with the help of the immune system of the patients. And so for that, we had access to, in this ZUMA-1 trial, to biopsies that were taken before at diagnosis, before CAR T cell infusion, before CAR T cell infusion, after CAR T cell infusion, so that we could see the impact of CAR T cells on the immune microenvironment, and following treatment also for the patients who had a relapse at relapse. And we asked several questions, including which are the patients that are responding to CAR T cells, and can we see differences based on the pre-treatment samples? Pre-infusion of CAR T cells, does it matter? What are the changes post-CAR T cell treatment? What are the mechanisms of a relapse, or can we predict toxicities? And for that, we had access to large tumor biopsies. From the ZUMA-1 clinical trial, 135 biopsies. Then the ZUMA-7 is the second line treatment because it's been approved for third line. Then the ZUMA-7 is the second line treatment, and we had access to 252 biopsies, and then DLBCL without CAR treatment, 249 biopsies. And so briefly, when we analyze these samples before on at the bottom and after CAR T cell treatment, you can see here the impact of CAR T cells to the immune microenvironment, and this is actually impacting many aspects of the immune microenvironment. It is also impacting the immune microenvironment differently depending whether the patient has a complete response or does not have a complete response. Importantly, among the rapid changes that are happening in the tumor microenvironment, there is a strong increase of some very, very interesting genes, because many of them are in fact part of the immune contexture that I described earlier, including the checkpoint, including the interferon gamma pathway, including the cytotoxic T cells, including IL-15, which is a key cytokine, especially for CAR T cells to expand, and chemokines. We also look deeper at the immune cells and the phenotypes of the immune cells within the immune microenvironment. And you have here examples, but we have, of course, quantification on multiple patients, of an example of a complete responder on top versus a patient that is not a complete responder at the bottom. And this is a multiplex chromogenic bright field, so the brightplex technology that allows on a single slide to quantify multiple markers and allow to have a very precise phenotype, for example, here for the exhausted or the activated T cells or myeloid cells. And you can see already very important differences in the complete responders. Very importantly, pre-infusion, so pre-treatment with CAR T cells, the biopsy that was used to analyze the pre-treatment samples was very much associated with the likelihood or not to respond to CAR T cells. This is a predefined signature, the ones that I mentioned in one of the first slides, this immunosign that we optimized in solid tumors. We applied it directly in here, and this predefined signature, as you can see, these are the different patients between the non-responders and the responders, clearly shows that the responders have a much higher expression of these immune contexture genes measured by this immunosign pre-treatment. And you can see the difference in the response rate. Also, you can see that there is a nice correlation. These are the three independent data sets between myeloid secreted cytokines and chemokines and T cell subsets in the tumor microenvironment. Also, very importantly, the pre-treatment samples allow to predict the likelihood of response to CAR T cells. And this is what you can see here. The immunoscore directly or the immunosign with the immune signatures of the adaptive immunity shows very dramatic difference in terms of survival post-CAR T-cell treatment. And in the multivariate analysis, this is, of course, highly significant. The only remaining parameter is the tumor burden. And going deeper into the analysis of what is associated with CAR T-cell response in the responder patients and looking at the subsets of T-cells, here I'm highlighting some interesting difference. In fact, the patients who have a complete response have already pre-existing cytotoxic T cells that are PD-1 positive, TIM-3 negative, and they could be either LAG-3 positive or negative. And this is shown in these two box plot, whereas the other subtypes are no different. So of course, the T cell fitness is important. And in fact, in the apheresis product, it seems better to have more juvenile, naive type T cells. The dose of the CAR T cells is important. The tumor burden, the initial tumor burden is important, but probably even as important, the pre-treatment and the pre-existing immunity of the patient matters. And this, I think, should be taken also into consideration in the design of different CARs. And with that, if you are interested in knowing more about the immune contexture, we have a more recent review about it. And I'd like to thank all the people in the lab, including Franck Pagès, all the students, postdocs, technicians, engineers, all our collaborators, and to thank also deeply all the centers in the world who participated into the validation of the immunoscore. Thank you for your attention.